purport is any science is based on the facility of expert discrimination. By skillful definition of isolated and interactive components, one becomes expert in any field. Okay, that there's a lot in that. The way it was written is a little thick. But basically, you have to tell one thing from another. And when you can tell one thing from the other and how to interact, because myself, I used to be a technician, so they train you in a procedure. First, you're supposed to know how it's supposed to work. And then, when it's not working properly, you see where it went off track. So you have to know what each of the components are, and they have each field has its own wording, they call it nomenclature, by which first you have to learn how to name all the parts. And then after you get to name all the parts, you understand how they function. They give you called a schematic or a wiring diagram. The wiring diagram is just showing you how all the parts are laid out. And the schematic is just showing you the function of how each piece functions. So after you learn that in any field, you get to see how things work. You know what a thing is supposed to do, if it's doing it, if it's not doing it. They have meters to test if it's got sufficient, the properties it's supposed to have. And then one becomes expert and he finds that actually everything works this way. And that's the way they're putting out here. Any science is based on this facility of being able to discriminate. And of course, in this verse, they talk about the science of the soul by which one distinguishes spirit from matter. So Srila Prabhupada gave us a definition of that. Do you know what definition that was? Do you remember what it was? I gave a class just a little while ago. Okay. So knowledge. What's the definition of knowledge that Prabhupada gives? 10.5 Bhagavad Gita. He gives... Knowledge is being able to tell what is matter, what is spirit, and the controller of both. Sound familiar? I did it. We had a class last year. So, what is matter, what is spirit, and the controller of both? Because here the... Everything is being based on that. That's talking about here is the science of the soul. And Prabhupada is giving us this knowledge of how to tell what is matter and what is spirit and the controller of both. So, in this swing, I'll continue on the purport. Ultimately, the most intelligent person can isolate spirit, soul from matter and describe the properties of matter and spirit as both isolated and interactive components of reality. Maybe we'll spend a minute on that just to explain that a little bit. So the way in the Sri Upanishad text 11 it says, only for one who knows the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy, Ashnute, the full blessings of immortality. So that fits right in with this when it's talking about the properties of matter and spirit. Both isolated and interactive components of reality. So if we break that down into the terms that we're more familiar with, just like in a dictionary, when you look up a word in a dictionary, the way you define one word is by a lot of other words. And those other words, you sometimes have to look those up again, and then gradually you understand what there's being discussed. So with these purports, they're actually paraphrasing different verses. So when you look up one verse, it's defined by other verses. So that's how we understand each verse, is by understanding other verses. So in this verse here, we understand that the beginning of the 14th chapter in Bhagavad Gita, it says, "Now I'll just explain to you the supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, by knowing which the sages have obtained the supreme perfection." And because this, the first part of this verse here is talking about the final stage of samadhi, this samadhi has to do specifically, these are all quite related, with understanding what is matter and what is spirit, and the properties of both, and they're interactive, because in samadhi, I'm going to go back to this point. I'm just going to read, since we mentioned samadhi is mentioned here, and it's talking also about how to discriminate matter and spirit. These two fit together very nicely. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text, is it 23? It's a bunch of verses, isn't it? 20 through 23. Krishna explains that, because Krishna consciousness, we're understanding, is by the process of sadhana. And sadhana means always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So we're learning how to see everything connected to Krishna. So after you see everything connected to Krishna, knowing what is matter and what is spirit, in control of both, then one can discriminately and surrender to be finished with the influence of the material energy. It says, by practicing Krishna consciousness, 325.18, then the material energy works less powerfully upon you. So it may still be present, but your interest in listening to it, to being identified with it, is becoming slackened. So in this verse on 20 through 23 in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, it says, in the stage of perfection, sound good? Stage of perfection, atato brahma jignas, now is the time to inquire in the human form of life, what is the perfection of existence? Because, you know, in that perfection of existence, there's no suffering, there's no death, there's no ignorance. Or the other counterpart of that is eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And if you ever analyze what are the things that you're trying to do, you're counteracting ignorance by either going to school, eternity. There may be some things in the health section about how to not suffer from the bodily condition of life, which is ultimately a very grave situation. We were discussing earlier, Seish and I, about this human form of life is, it's a grave situation, because unless one understands how to perfect his life, his destination of this body is a grave. So there's some gravity involved in remembering that. And Krishna gives us pop quizzes, or someone we know a pop quiz, to refresh our memory, because we know that the most wonderful thing in this world is that one forgets at every moment that there's a pushing need to become Krishna conscious. And if you don't, you die. It's timely, untimely, death is coming, and everybody kind of knows it. But when you're young, you know, I'm young, I'm not going to die. And when you're old, you still put it off. But we have to think about it. So here, we're discussing how to be in that state of consciousness. Yam yam api smaram bhavam. It says, whatever state of being one is in when the time of death comes, that state he'll obtain. So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he explains that to always be conscious of that fact and be remembering Krishna. That's with a particular quality of consciousness. So I'm going to try to read this again. In that stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely refrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. Just like here it says, amongst the eight progressive stages of yoga, I'm the final stage, samadhi, in which the soul is completely separated from illusion. So that means he's connected with Krishna by bhakti, and he's engaged in devotional service. By engaging in devotional service, one automatically forgets the bodily conception of life. He's refrained from material mental activities by the practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized. Okay, what's it characterized by? Characterizes, here we're discussing components, interactive, both isolated and interactive components of reality. So this is our reality that we're in right now. We're presently embodied and in a human form of life, very fortunate, most fortunate we've come in contact with the Vedic knowledge in the cyclic succession, coming from Gaudiya, Vaishnav, Madhva, Sampradaya, where we can understand Kevala Ananda Khan. It's not difficult. It's actually a joyful process of chanting, dancing, remembering Krishna. So this perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and relish and rejoice in the self. So samadhi here is characterized. How is that remembrance? Because we have shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam. So the smaranam, we've discussed this in the past, it has different stages of smaranam. It says in the beginning, your remembrance of Krishna can be interrupted. But as you're progressing, your remembrance of Krishna proceeds uninterruptedly. It doesn't get interrupted anymore. Ahoitu kiya patiyata. There isn't anything that can interrupt your meditation on Krishna, your remembrance of Krishna, because this is your devotional service. And it's all built into chanting Hare Krishna without the 10 offenses. Without these 10 offenses, there's no more break. These are the different breaks in our consciousness or characterized by these 10 or 11 offenses. So he gets to see the pure self by the pure mind and relish and rejoice in the self. So what even in the beginning stages, Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param, it says Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. So this prasanatma, it means the soul is happy. This is the characteristic of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gave us the direct instruction. He says, chant and be happy. So that's an instruction. I don't think it was cliche or just a saying. When you chant Hare Krishna, you're happy. You have to be. Why not? You're realizing your eternal existence with Krishna. You're seeing this material energy for what it is. What's a cheating thing. They have different words for when you're cheated. One is you're fooled. He fooled me. Then they have it when it's a deliberate setup. They call it a sting. Sting operation. Has anybody heard that? Or is that an antiquated word? Where they set it all up to fool you and take advantage of you. And when it all becomes revealed at the end, it's a horrible feeling. I was cheated. But was I really cheated? I was trying to cheat them when they cheated me. I thought I was going to be the one that was enjoy this cheating process. But instead, I got cheated. That feels terrible. So, in Krishna consciousness, we can see this material energy, And sometimes it's really blatant. Like sometimes, here, I'll give a for instance. I was in India, and when you go there, one of the things you do is you go shopping. So I was buying a dhoti. So I'm looking at this one dhoti, and it has a hole in it about an inch square. So I brought it to the attention of the merchant there. I said, this dhoti's got a hole in it that's an inch square. He says, it is no problem. He says, when you wash it, all the fibers will tighten up and the hole will be gone. I'm going to get a different one. Well, why don't you wash it first? And you know, I mean, it's like, so. It's funny now, you know, but he said it and I was waiting, you know, I was waiting to see the smiles, waiting, you know, like, hey, just kidding. He was serious. He was serious. So I said, maybe it takes training to be able to pull that off. I don't think I could do that. You know, could you tell somebody that with a straight face, you know? So anyway, the material energy is cheating us. We have our birthright in a human form of life is to become self-realized, realize our eternal nature, which is blissful and full of perfect knowledge. So when material energy comes, sometimes after you learn this expert discriminating knowledge, what is matter, what is spirit, what is the modes of nature, what is the bodily conception of life, what is the false ego, what is the senses and the sense objects, what is mahatattva, how the whole thing works, which you gradually understand. Then when Maya comes and she shows you something, here's something that you'll find enjoyable. And I think of the hole in the dhoti. How is this going to be enjoyable? It doesn't have my relationship with Krishna in it. It's not something I can dovetail. This is just raw material nature. Because it says as long as one's embodied, this is a purport to 270, where it says as long as one's embodied, the demands of the senses will continue. Just like we know from 259 Bhagavad Gita, it says a person may be restricted from sense enjoyment or sense objects, though the taste for sense objects and sense enjoyment continues. So it still continues. It's not that, oh, I thought that was just going to stop, so I didn't have to make the choice. No, the choice is still there, but you make the choice, no, I don't want that. Just say no to Maya. Right? Just say no. Anyway, so how is it possible to have the strength to say no is because of that enjoyment called Param Jisvanavardhante. By trying to please the spiritual master, Yesha Prashada, Bhagava Prashada, you get this taste. This taste is growing more and more. In fact, this taste takes you right out of the material world. The taste leads one further forward to attachment in self-realization. So, and that attachment matures into feelings. You actually start to feel some the nature of what spiritual life is like. What's that 1213 verse? Samsiddhi Hari Toshanam. By your activities that you're performing according to your nature, you feel some exchange coming from Krishna, this higher taste, this samsiddhi hari toshanam. So when you're between you and Krishna, you and the spiritual master, when you're sincerely, without any duplicity, just trying to please the spiritual master, it doesn't have to be complicated. It would be a very simple thing, just cooking. When you're making a nice offering, I hope you like this, I'm cooking. I was listening to a lecture from Srila Prabhupada from 1966. So it's right in the beginning, nobody hardly knows anything. And Prabhupada says, Krishna wants you to feed him. What? Who's Krishna? Krishna wants me to feed him? So, I mean, when you listen to those early lectures, you just think, Prabhupada's just telling things that are so amazing. Krishna wants you to feed him. So you make something at simple consciousness to Krishna, I want you to enjoy this. My wife was trained in Los Angeles, New Dwarka, in the 70s when Prabhupada was there a lot. And you're not allowed to discuss the preparation. You have to wash your hands 50 times. Everything she does, she maintains such an incredible quality when she's in the kitchen. So I'm always trying to aspire to come up to that quality of the consciousness that you have when you're cooking. It's such an incredible yoga of kitchen religion. So, okay. So here we were partially out of time. Okay. Characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and relish, that's what catches me, and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. And what's the greatest difficulty? It's the time of death. This indeed is actual freedom from the miseries arising from material contact. And if we just go two verses up, there's a nice instructive verse. It starts off, Shanai, Shanai. And it's not the instrument that they play, like a clarinet or something. It says, gradually, step by step, one should become situated and entranced by means of his intelligence, sustained by full conviction, and thus the mind should be fixed on the self alone and should think of nothing else. So this is actually happening without us even noticing, simply by being engaged in devotional service. So I'm going to get back to the purport, since the time element doesn't slow down enough. Okay. So what we were talking about, ultimately, the most intelligent person can isolate the spirit soul from matter and describe the properties of matter and spirit as both isolated and interactive components of reality. So I think we got that a little bit. In other words, in devotional service with knowledge, you can recognize Maya. That's what it, and Maya has her plan. She tries to captivate you. She has two different potencies, throwing and covering. You know what the throwing and covering translate to? What that means, throwing and covering? Throwing means, I think I can get some happiness if I just do this. Anybody ever have that idea? If I just buy this, if I just get this situation, if I just manipulate the material energy from here to here, from your pocket to my pocket, from this, if I can just move things around, I'll become happy. So that's the throwing potency. And what's the covering potency? I'm happy. I got what I wanted. I can't quite pay for it yet, but I got a good plan. So this, that's the cover. So Maya, she's always tempting us. So what do we understand? Prabhupada said, accept it as axiomatic truth. That's a math term. That means you just accept it because it'll work better that way. If you just accept this, if you try to prove it, you could spend a lot of time, but you just accept it and things will work. You'll see it works for all the formulas. That there's no happiness in this material world. The material world doesn't have the potency given to it by Krishna to make you happy. It gives you something that looks like happiness, and that brings us to what analogy is that? That's the analogy of a mirage. A mirage has almost all the qualities of water. It looks like water, so that's a quality. It can get you excited if you don't know it's a mirage to go after it. That's another quality. So what are the qualities it's missing? Substance. It's not actually there. You can't hold on to it because you can't ever capture it. And what is it? Substance. Oh, and it won't ever quench your thirst. I mean, water has the ability to quench your thirst, so you never really get satisfied with it, even though it looks like it. So you understand those the interactiveness of how Maya works. Otherwise, just like suppose you watch the magic show. It's really incredible. How do they do those things? You become so enamored by it, you decide, I'm going to become a magician. And then you become the magician, and they teach you all the ways that it works. And then it's flat. There's no more excitement anymore. The only thing that's good is maybe fooling other people and making money. But as far as how it all works, the mystery's out of it. So in this material world, people are just running after material energy, and then they're dying, and you get another choice, 8,400,000. Well, actually, you've already made your choice. Dive in the train, it just facilitates the plan, and you go cycling through birth after birth, and it's not a bluff. The other day I saw a bug, not so hard in Florida, and I said, this isn't a bluff. That's a soul in there. He got himself into a bug body. And it's going to be a long time before he's out of that bug body. Or how about these nice trees? They're tree bodies. And you look all around. There's horses. There's cows. Cats. And you can see that covering potency. You ever see a puppy? They're always wagging their tail. This is great. I'm a dog. I was a human, and now I'm a dog. But this is just so much fun. I'll come by and I'll lick every... You know, it's like... So you have to be a little scared. 1830, Bhagavad Gita says, you have to know a symptom of knowing this, of knowing what is matter and what is spirit, is you have to know what is to be feared. This covering potency where you think, oh, I got some plans, I'm going to be happy here. That's scary, because that'll get you... Right in the middle of that, if you get interrupted by, so rudely interrupted by death, you'll get to finish it in another body. And do you really want that? Do you really want another body? All right, pick out another body. Right now you could pick out another body. If you had your choice, which one would you like? Would you like a taller one, a thinner one, a prettier one, a smarter one? But there's already people who have those bodies. And in fact, you take a look at the statistics of the people, more people are depressed and commit suicide, they're at the top of their game. Was it Robin Williams, you know, a famous actor, did all this, how much, all these incredible things that everybody else is thinking, if I could be like him, he's so depressed he can. So if you think, which body would you like? Maybe a male body or maybe a female body. How about a body here, a body there? And when you think about it, you think, actually, none of these bodies are, they got something about, they have an expiration date. It's not so good. So you have to meditate or think about, reflect on these points and develop a determination, a resolution that'll carry you from when you're being under attack of the influence, just like in a compass. People know how to work a compass. You set a course or an azimuth. You get how to do it. And you usually, a lot of times, if you're on the top of a hill, you set your compass on the top of the hill of the landmark that you can spot that you want to go to, because when you go back down into the valley, you won't be able to see that anymore. So you'll rely on your compass. So you get your determination in these classes, in this time when your consciousness works, because this class will be over, perhaps, shortly. And when you walk out the door, there's a high probability that the day's activities, you've been suspended a little bit of time from your daily activities, but as soon as you walk out the door, they're all going to be downloaded into your consciousness of all the rest of the stuff that you're going to do. And now you're getting a late start because the class ran late. And now I've got to think of all these stuff I got to do. And then the class, when's the next time you're going to have a chance to ever think about that? Maybe when you go to sleep if you don't have. So this is the time you have to, that's why we come back every day. So we at least get a break. So once again, I'm going to try to finish the purport before the end of the class. All right. So it says, the prolification of innumerable philosophical speculations is due to different modes of perception within the material world. I just got that in a text message the other day, that everything is based on perception, because, you know, I write a different opinion than other people have a lot of times, and so people, sometimes they're nice to me and they'll just say, well, you have a different perception than I do. That's when they're kind. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, sarvascaham rida, we can say this all together. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in everyone's heart and awards a particular degree of knowledge or ignorance according to one's desire and merit. That, you could do a whole class just on that. Should I just continue? Oh, well. Thus, the Lord himself is the basis of mundane process of philosophical speculation, for he creates differing and alternating modes of perception within the conditioned soul. It is to be understood that one can acquire perfect knowledge only by hearing directly from Lord Krishna and not by hearing from conditioned philosophers who imperfectly perceive the creation of the Lord through the screen of their personal desires. It's all transcendental. So we're in the 11th canto, so it takes time to get to this point. Okay, so I'm going to try to stop now and ask if there's any questions or comments, reflections. We got one trivia crumb. Thank you for being patient.
So it's stated here that the most intelligent person can distinguish between matter and spirit and tell the difference between the two. But now we have the most so-called intelligent people.
Oh, so-called. That's the key.
Like a scientist. But they have no clue about spirit.
Well, according,
all they know about is matter, and thinking that matter is the ultimate of everything.
There's two definitions, at least, for each word. Gross. One is called Vidvadruti, and the other is called Agyarudi. This is from the Chaitanya Bhagavat Bhakti Siddhanta's commentary. And he says, you can define everything mundanely, and you can define everything with an enlightened, transcendental perspective. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, the purports are all written in the Vidvadruti, vid, knowledge. They're all written from the enlightened point of view. So intelligence, Prabhupada defines also in that same purport, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 4, 5. He gives a definition. So this is Krishna's definition, Prabhupada's purport. He says, it's the power to analyze things in the correct perspective. So if we gave an IQ test to these so-called material ones, we would find that they have a very low IQ when it comes to understanding what is matter, what is spirit, and the controller, both. So materially speaking, they would have one definition, but spiritually speaking, they can't see their soul within their coverings or the super soul. So thank you all for being so patient.
Here comes to the leaders of the world.
But we're simply repeating what Krishna has said through the disciplic unbroken disciplic succession. So these are not exactly my words, even though they look like they're coming from me. I'm actually just trying to repeat what I've heard from Srila Prabhupada. And it's, oh, we have another question.
Hare Krishna.
Here. She may or may not need a microphone. She's got good volume. Thank you.
Just to remind us how Krishna is so wonderful and amazing, Robin Williams and Michael Jackson and so many others famous that have died, somehow they were able to get mercy. Michael Jackson got mercy.
Oh.
Because this Michael Decatur, his band, his group, or, they weren't performing with him. So she personally went into the dressing rooms to give him birthday. And it was not one time, it was a couple of times.
That's wonderful. So, the devotees are so kind, so merciful, that even though these different personalities are intoxicated, we're all kind of intoxicated by the body we're in, that the mercy extends out. Srila Prabhupada was talking about when we go on street sankirtan, and it says it forces everyone that hears a holy name to develop pious activities. It puts money into their piety account. They automatically become pious simply by hearing the holy name. So what can we do? We're forcing everyone to become pious simply by hearing the holy name, giving them good fortune whether they want it or not.
And Robin Williams got a book in San Francisco outside of a coffee shop. He was walking by, everybody was distributing books there. So he gave a book. He made Humor Smart. I don't recall it. I have it written down. Because
oh, really? Thank you.
So, his illness was through the years. So somehow or other he did the book.
Every town and village, Srila Prabhupada is fulfilling the prophecy of Lord Chaitanya that every town and village, through following Prabhupada's desire, Bhaktisiddhanta's desire, Lord Chaitanya's desire, that all the personalities are getting an opportunity to become benefited by the mercy of actually Radharani. Krishna was trying to understand Radharani and Sri Radhaya Pranaya Mahima. So I always think it's her mercy. Thank you. All glories to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.